The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on the rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, give it 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Welcome, everyone, to the third episode of the Bracket Madness edition of All Things Elite. I am your host, Floyd Johnson, and joining me, as always, this is at this point, is Mr. Sir Sam Brown. I said Mr. Sir, just Sir Sam Brown. Yeah, we don't need Mr. and Sir. We don't need both prefixes. It's Sir Sam Brown. What's up, Sam?
A knight of the realm of the Commonwealth. Yes. That is correct. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Sir.
Yeah, Mr. Sir.
The knight.
You can tell you're not from the Commonwealth. You're one of the rebels from one of the rebel states, I believe.
Yes.
Chucked your tea in the bay in Boston and just went from there. Downhill.
Dude, and you know what? And that's where tea belongs, is in the ocean, because it's crap.
My English blood is screaming right now. It's absolutely screaming. Yeah. I love it. In fact, every podcast that we've done, apart from this, until this one, I've had a cup of tea with me. Because it's in the evening here, so it's perfect time for a cup of tea. I'd have it with me, but here you are insulting it.
No, tea is absolutely terrible, and it's the worst thing in the world. And then I found out, so I was trying to get healthier in life, so I was trying to switch from other caffeine to green tea, and then I found out green tea gives me heartburn. Like, terribly heartburn. And yep. If you look up, it's the percentage of people that it gives heartburn to. And I am in that percentage of people that it gives heartburn to. So it's like my body literally rejects tea because it's that terrible. So
have you ever tried rooibos or chai tea?
See, I've never heard of the first one.
Okay.
And the second one, I heard chai is just the word for tea. So it's like you're saying tea. I didn't know that. I learned that watching TV, because you learn everything from television. But chai tea, I think I've had once in my life. I didn't feel like it tasted like anything to me. But that's probably my Southwestern upbringing, because we put a lot of sugar and salt and everything. So... If it doesn't have like a cup of sugar in it, I'm like, nope, doesn't taste like anything.
Well, in the interest of bringing some civility to this podcast, I thought we should lead off with this conversation. So rooibos is kind of vanilla-y, and you have it as tea, and you have a bit of milk with it. You can put some honey with it. Chai is cinnamony. So it's kind of spicy, like it's kind of like Christmas. One of my favorite drinks is called a dirty hippie or a dirty chai, which is a chai tea but with a shot of espresso in it. So it's kind of like you get the deliciousness of like a flat white coffee, but with you know, the cinnamoniness that you get from chai. So there you go. Look, Floyd, you're learning things all day long. You've got two things to try out now. I don't think either of those have got caffeine in there, so they might not actually solve your problem that you have. So
they have tea with no caffeine.
Yes,
that's disappointing. I mean, like, the only reason I would drink tea is for caffeine. The fact that, because you said you were drinking tea at night, and I was like, I have a strict rule. I don't drink caffeine within like 6 hours of bedtime, because I started taking in too much caffeine, so I would just like wake up and I could never like fully be asleep. So I am very caffeine sensitive. So I don't take caffeine. Like, I go to bed at 7 a.m. here. I don't do caffeine after 1 a.m. So 6 hours of bedtime. So that is interesting that it doesn't have tea. I mean, it doesn't have caffeine in it. I might have to pick up some chai tea as a late night drink to try. And if it's bad, you know, it's your fault.
Yeah, certain kinds of tea are actually good for helping promote sleep and helping you sleep well. So, and I believe Rooibos in particular is one. So that, as I said, R-O-I-B-O-S-S.
R-O-I-B-O-S-S.
Rooibos tea. And it's kind of, as I said, it's kind of vanilla-y. If you want that sweetness, you could add sugar, or my suggestion would be some honey. It just kind of... it's a little more mellow than sugar, and it sort of goes with the vanilla-iness a little bit nice, a little bit better. Kind of get like honey vanilla, almost a butterscotch.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look at this.
Tea education. That's what you got. Yep. That for free, everyone. You got that for free. We're not
came
even
for the wrestling, but look what you get.
That's per Sam. You get this for free. Yep. I'm going to start off by letting you know, make sure you are downloading this fine show on YouTube Music or Apple Podcasts, because, you know, Google Podcasts is going away. So I need it. I'm taking that out the intro. Please leave a rating and review if you're so inclined. You can follow us at AT Elite Pod, at Social Suplex for the whole channel, at Austin Sumowitz, at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. It was funny. I saw this thing that said, explain your username. And I was like, me and Austin are so boring. Explain your username. It's our name. That's just my real name. Sir Sam, what is your Twitter for the people listening?
Sir_Samuel, and I'll tell you the reason for my username. My full name is Sam Brown, which is, you know, amongst the most common names you could find. It's a name that both men and women have. In fact, the year that I was born, there was a pop star who had a number one song called, and her name was Sam Brown. It's a song called Stop. If you want to look at that, you better stop before you tear my love apart. I'm not going to sing it for you because we've talked about tea and we've kept the listeners' attention. If I sing, people will immediately tune out. They're just not going to, they're not going to want to hear that. They don't need to sit through that torture. But Sam Brown.
I'm going to say, you sing though, if you sing with that accent, it's okay. Cause everything is okay with an accent. I know you can't hear it, but we can hear it very aggressively.
There you go. Well, I feel like Americans are much better singers than Australians. And you guys seem to have like a much better sense of harmony than most Australians, I think, and melody. But anyway, that's by the by. My username, because I've got such a common name, Sam Brown, it was either you have Sam Brown and then some assortment of numbers at the end, or I just thought, why don't I just stick Sir at the start? And that's how I got my first email address. I'm not going to say it on here, although you could probably find it by giving the information I've just told you. You could probably end up doxing me or stealing my email address pretty easily, or emailing me a bunch of spam pretty easily based on that information. And that sort of followed me into Twitter. When I signed up for Twitter, I put Sir_Samuel. My full name is Samuel, Samuel Brown, not Sam Brown. It's a shortened version. And then when I started writing, the place I was writing, everyone had their own they were still using, you know, like nicknames in the forum that I was at. So I signed up as Sir Sam, and that's how I've stayed.
Well, my name is Floyd Johnson Jr. because my name is Floyd Johnson Jr. because I was named after my father, Floyd Johnson Sr. Yes, that was the very long way to say something very boring. Yeah. And I joined Twitter early, but I didn't use Twitter until late. Yeah. And I always say,
but you squatted on that name. You got that name.
Yeah, this is the thing about me. I've always, like, I hate the egg icons and Cody Rhodes 1279.
Oh,
and I hate all those. I want you to know what I'm saying on Twitter is from me, because it holds me responsible to be a decent human being, you know, when I'm on Twitter. I can't just be like throwing people under the bus because it's not some random number doing it. It's me. My picture's in the profile. I'm responsible for what I say. It was funny, in my deep, hardcore Florida State fandom, college football, this kid announced that he was going to a different school. And, of course, in my zest, I said, good luck, you know, basically sucking at the school. And this is before I got mature and realized that I should not care about where a 17-year-old is going to college. But this is in my zest. And then for the next 3 days, I was basically in an argument with alums of the university at the time. I'm not going to say. You can find it, because I also don't delete tweets. I don't. If I was an asshole on Twitter, it's going to be there. If I was a little creepy, which I was, shockingly, I once tweeted out that I thought Meghan Markle was the most beautiful woman in the world before she was a princess. Just me watching an episode of Suits. So if you want to find,
hey, you're creepy, just ahead of the curve, bro.
I'm like, if you want to find a thirsty, creepy Floyd tweet, you can go back and find it, because I didn't delete that shit because I said it. A very dumb version of me said it, but guess what? I said it. That me, I wouldn't say that now, but you know, that was me back then. So I am all about Twitter responsibility and social media responsibility. If you're gonna talk shit, stand behind it. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't universally say that, you know, if someone doesn't have their real name or profile shot on there, that they've got nothing good to say, because I know I've got friends on there who started that way and changed, or even still that way for whatever reason, and they still have good things to say. And vice versa, like there's plenty of dickheads out there who've, you know, are fully willing to stand behind their ridiculous and disgusting opinions. But I feel like you're more likely to be a dickhead if you don't have your face on it, and you're less likely to be a dickhead if you've got your actual face and name on it. Like, you know, I think it wouldn't be too hard for someone, if I said something totally out of hand, it wouldn't be too hard for someone to find out a little bit more about me and potentially find my employer or something and, you know, do that at them. So that's, you know, a reason for me to, you know, never say anything that's, you know, totally out of hand and totally ridiculous on social media. And I think that's the same for everyone. You know, if you wouldn't say something to their face, to someone's face in person, then you probably shouldn't say it to them on social media either.
The really harsh stuff, I just save for DMs. I talk to my friends and I'm like, man, wouldn't it be funny if I said this? And then I send it to them and we laugh and no one's feelings are getting hurt because it was just in DMs. Publicly, yep. You should be, you know, try to be a decent person. Try to treat people like they're people. So yes, that is a public service announcement from your friendly Floyd Johnson Jr., who, if you're going to say something bad about somebody, yep, at least respect them enough to say it where they can't hear it.
We've both survived on the internet for a long time at this point, like, you know, 20 plus years for both of us, I imagine. So, yes, you know, kids, listen to your elders.
Yes. I have a few borderline weird tweets, but that's about it. That's as far as it goes.
Hey, you've learned from them. You've learned from them.
Yes. So now
you're not thirsting after celebrities on your main anymore. At least that's just in the group chats.
Yes, my thirst is reserved for Willow Nightingale, and that's it. I'm also very, very, very scared of her husband. So yeah, I won't ever say
who's
anything.
Her husband? I don't know.
His name is Rex Lawless.
Rex Lawless, what a name.
And this dude is a huge gym mammoth.
Okay, I'm Googling him. This guy, he looks like a mix between Mustafa Ali and Bruiser Brody.
Yes, like I met him once, yep, and he's like the nicest guy in the world, but you know.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of that, though. Yeah. That is a big, mean-looking bloke.
Yes, he's a human. He's a human stop sign, basically. If you think about talking to Willow, there's the human stop sign.
Yeah.
So we're going to start talking about wrestling since that's what people are tuning in for. Sam, just quickly, me and Austin have covered it on our show, so just to let you come out. Overall thoughts, did you have any things that stuck out to you on the Dynamite Rampage combination? And did you watch it all as one piece or did you split it up?
I didn't watch it all as one piece, just with the time that I do it. Watching 3 hours just pushes it too late at night. So I watched Dynamite and then the next night I watched Rampage. Look, my takeaway is that how spoiled are we as wrestling fans that we get a card like this on TV? You know, we get matches like Okada versus Kingston and Copeland versus Christian Cage on the regular. Like, they were really fun matches to watch, but they weren't like the thing that sticks out to me is if any of these matches, there's at least one match a week that if we had seen it, if it had been on Raw in the 2010s, we would have not stopped talking about it for years. Like, I constantly think about the Shawn Michaels and Shelton Benjamin match, right? Everyone remembers that from Raw. Well, everyone who was a fan at that point or was a fan in the 2010s remembers that match because it was thought about in such glowing terms as this, you know, incredible match. I've watched it back and it would not stand out on a Dynamite at all. We see matches every single week that would absolutely blow it out of the water. And just how fortunate are we to live in a time where, you know, AEW is putting on cards like this one. I in terms of the matches, I loved the Okada and Kingston match. That was the match I was most looking forward to on this. It was the result everyone predicted, but the way they did it was just so good. And Okada has so quickly adapted to the TV, the way that he just smirks and mugs at the camera is so well done. He wrestled like such a classic style as well. It actually caught my eye how slow paced he was, particularly in comparison to what we're used to from an AEW Dynamite opener. He wrestled at like a methodic pace, but then that just emphasizes when he does, you know, the drop kick or when he does the Rainmaker, how swift and explosive it feels. And, you know, I love Eddie Kingston, but it was so good to see the promo afterwards where you could see the, you know, this sort of elevated Eddie Kingston, almost like, what would you call it? Almost enlightened Eddie Kingston. You could start to see that getting chipped away at, you know, like he'd been talking about how he wasn't going to be defined by jealousy and rage and whatnot. Now he was this, you know, triple crown champion, how he'd got over that side of himself, those negative traits that he'd carried around for so long. But you could see now he's lost to Okada. You can see like that enlightenment, that facade almost, not a facade, but like that outlook starting to get chipped away at. And that fills me with excitement because a vengeful and angry Eddie Kingston is one that is very fun to watch and listen to on promos. Look, I really enjoyed the I Quit match that surprised me with how good it was. I'm not sure why it surprised me so much on reflection because Adam Copeland Edge has always been great at these sorts of matches and Christian Cage is in like just incredible form. So I'm not sure why it surprised me so much, why I didn't have, you know, like higher expectations for it than what I did going in. But because I didn't go in with, you know, sky high expectations, I was really blown away by it. It was such a fun match. Yeah, look, the Dynamite afterwards was also very fun. We're going to talk about the tag match, the women's tag match as well at the end. The hardcore match was very fun as well. You know, Sky Blue getting some red on her and you know, them getting out the thumbtacks. And in the grand tradition of the women's division in those tag matches, just laying it all out on the line and going for broke with some crazy looking bumps. Yeah, it was a very fun 3 hours of wrestling. And yeah, as I said, my main takeaway from it all, having consumed it all, is just how fortunate we are to be able to be fans of the product at this point and be able to watch it at this point, at this level that we get treated to every single week?
Everybody, if you've listened to this, you probably listened to me on another show, and it's just, you know, you got to get used to one thing that I can say about it is that Dynamite was like, when you look at the how it was wrestled between the Okada match and you look at the Christian and Cope match, basically those were pretty much anti the normal AEW style. So we've always talked about that variety, the hodgepodge of professional wrestling, right? I think Wednesday's Dynamite, right, if you look at what we just got, is going to be was very entertaining. This Wednesday's Dynamite, which we'll talk about shortly, is going to be just as entertaining, but in a completely different way. And I just like, that's what AEW is going to bring to you, is they are going to bring you that variety of wrestling. Because that Cope and Christian match was a very WWE match. There's nothing wrong with it. It was a very entertaining, high-level WWE match. It was a that kind of thing. You look at Okada and Eddie Kingston, it wasn't this super high-flying kind of thing. It was kind of a regular match where Okada was just better than Eddie Kingston. You know, that's what it was. It was like the best wrestler in the world, one of the best wrestlers in the world, was better than the other guy. And it wasn't like this dramatic thing. It was just, he was just better. And it's gonna tell the different stories going through, and that excites me going through. So, I mean, there's a few other places, of course, I want AEW to improve, which is the one we're gonna talk about tonight, which is the tag team division. So we got our one tag match to review this and it is best.
Can I just say, this is not madness. That I was promised bracket madness, Tony. This is not madness. It needs to be said every week, even though we are having fun watching these tag matches. This is not bracket madness. This is just bracket fun. Would you call it bracket fun, Floyd? But it's definitely not bracket madness.
There is no need for a word after. It's just a bracket. It's just a bracket. It's just like, it was like when we found out we were going to get Meat Madness and they said it was going to be three people. It was like, This is not Meat Madness. This is not Bracket Madness. This is not reminiscent of the NCAA tournament. This is not any of that. This is just a regular wrestling tournament that, you know, we wanted more. But again, you know, we assume, you know, there's got to be scheduling, injury, storyline reasons that you didn't do it. But I just like, man, with a company so deep, like a company that is so deep, You assume that they could have at least put twice as many teams out there.
Yes. And it needs to be said, and Will Washington, I know you're listening, note this down. Next time you do Meet Madness, it is not an option. It is an absolute certainty and requirement that you put the Butcher in the Meet Madness match. That is not an optional extra. That is a requirement. The Butcher needs to be in the Meet Madness match.
How do you have a meat-themed match without the Butcher?
I know! He's the one that chops it up.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, his name is the Butcher. I'm like, yes, you gotta have some fun with this. You know, it's okay to be like, oh, this is serious because it's for a title. But you can have some fun with it up until, you know, the serious ending or whatever. So, yes. And in Bracket Madness, dude, there's just so many teams that you could have just put in there. I mean, teams that didn't even have a chance, whatever. You could have put Silver and Reynolds. You could have put Cole Cabana and Brandon Cutler. You could have doubled the amount of teams in this bracket without ever leaving your company and pretty much probably stick with the exact same result that you were going to do anyway.
Okay.
Yes.
I can't agree more with you there, Floyd.
It's like, yeah, you don't have to change anything. So
let's breathe out. Let's together breathe out. We'll take a sip of our chai tea, theoretically our metaphorical chai tea that's going to help us sleep tonight, calm us down, soothe our nerves, soothe our anxieties, and we can talk about Best Friends versus Callis Family.
Yes, Best Friends versus the Callis Family. We got Orange Cassidy and Trent, because Chucky T is still out with injury, versus Will Hobbs and the tag team extraordinaire, one half of one of my favorite tag teams, Aussie Open, Kyle Fletcher. And I gotta say, overall thoughts, this match was super entertaining. What were your overall thoughts, sir?
Yeah, this was a pretty classic tag match. It was, my final note in it is, this was everything it needed to be. Not a whole lot more, but it was everything it needed to be, and it was very fun. The MVP of it was obviously, it was clearly Orange Cassidy, who just absolutely sold his ass off, particularly for Will Hobbs. Cassidy is just such a great wrestler and such a classic pro wrestler as well, in the way that he just absolutely sells and gives so much offense to the heels, and makes them look so strong. But then manages to come back, still selling, but come back and get the victory. It was a very fun match.
Yes, and this is a shout out to the Voices of Wrestling podcast. I don't remember, they did like the two flagship pluses and a flagship. So I don't know which one they said this on, but there was a callback on the match where apparently in Orange Cassidy's. I mean, in Will Hobbs' first match, it was against Orange Cassidy, and Orange Cassidy, like, immediately caught him with an orange punch at the beginning of the match and beat him, like, really quick. Well, Orange Cassidy goes for the punch. Will Hobbs catches him and then puts him in a spine buster. So it's a playback to their first match. I'm pretty sure the announcer said something. I was probably a little distracted. But when I heard that on the podcast, I thought that was so cool, and I don't think I brought it up on the other show. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah,
I think they've done a really good job of making Will Hobbs look very, very strong, keeping him strong.
Yep.
When you beat and him, also, it's going to mean something.
And also smart. Like, that wasn't the only time Hobbs countered some of Cassidy's signature moves. Like when he went for Slumdog Millionaire at one point, Hobbs just overpowered him. And same with in every situation when Cassidy went for a counter on Hobbs just blocked it with power. Even there was a suicide dive that Hobbs caught as well. Hobbs did look pretty great in this match, and his gear, man, his blue and gold gear was on point. Set the tone for a great performance. And you're right about that first thing, great way to start the match. And then, Hobbs poured the pain onto Cassidy.
Yes, and I don't know if they did this on purpose or if this is a story they were trying to tell. If you notice, there was not a lot of double team moves between like Kyle Fletcher and Will Hobbs. They didn't work together very much in the match. And I don't, like I said, I don't know what he does, but it would, in that case, it would make sense because they don't tag together. You know what I mean? He's not Mark Davis. They're not, they're not doing these Aussie Open. They did like one or two moves together, but it wasn't like a team thing. And I honestly thought it was that way kind of on the other side. They did the hug and all that stuff, but it was like more like Orange Cassidy just kind of beating up the other two people, which of course they keeps, you always want to keep Orange Cassidy strong. We're going to talk about this on another one, but he's probably your biggest homegrown star ever. So I just thought this match was really done well. And I even said at the beginning, because it wasn't Bracket Madness, where they were going to have to make up for it was in the in-ring product. You were going to have some banger matches to make everybody talk about how good this tournament was. And I'm looking at the first two matches, and they were both memorable for completely different reasons.
Mm. And Trent, I'll also add, so we've talked about Hobbs and Cassidy quite a bit. I'll also touched on Fletcher. I'll also add Trent did a really great job of like chipping in for his team. So Cassidy got the win. He was sort of the main guy on his side. He did the majority. He took the majority of offense and then gave the more impactful winning blows. But Trent did it a number of times when Cassidy was getting overwhelmed. Trent did jump in and had some good moments of his own, particularly, coming off the top rope. And also he did that twice, actually. He came off the top rope to affect and break up what was going on. So, yeah, some good moments for Trent in it as well. I also wanted to add some love for Daddy Magic on the commentary. He adds so much life and personality. I'd say, like, I really liked Chris Jericho as a commentator. He was a bit divisive and he was a bit shrill, particularly at the start. He sort of learned to tone it down, but I feel like I liked the sort of color and perspective that Chris Jericho offered. Daddy Magic does that, but with, I think, a less shrill tone. And because he's not Chris Jericho, you know, like, because Chris Jericho is Chris Jericho, he kind of makes things about Chris Jericho. Whereas Daddy Magic, you know, he's a competitor, but it's not like he's, you know, one of the top guys. So he's not hogging the spotlight, even unintentionally. I'm not even saying Chris Jericho did this intentionally, but it's just because it's Chris Jericho, it becomes a little bit about Chris Jericho. Daddy Magic isn't like that because he's not on that level. He's not on that level of star, but he's still got a level of charisma to him where he's able to add like a lot of personality to what's going on.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing. I think that's the difference. And it's nothing that Chris Jericho does, but Chris Jericho, when he's calling his matches, he's in the middle of storylines, right? Mm. So when he's calling a match with someone he hates, he has to still build up that he hates them, you know? And it's like, and it does take away from the match because it is putting the focus on Chris Jericho. Daddy Magic's in the thing with, you know, Christian, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But even when it's that, he doesn't really try to make it about himself. It's about what's the action in the ring. Mm. And it's just like, that's what you want from your color guy. Mm. You want him to give color to what's going on in the ring, not to take away from what's going on in the ring. And Chris Jericho is such a huge personality. He does take away from what's going on in the ring, at least a little bit.
Yeah. And such a huge presence in the roster and the world of AEW, whereas like with Daddy Magic, like even when Garcia's in there, which is his, you know, that's how he, well, actually, no, that's not true. So I was going to say that that's how he got his start as a commentator, was filling in for Garcia's matches, but that's not true because he used to be on Dark, on the Dark tapings when they were there. But that's sort of for Dynamite and Rampage in its most recent sort of form and collision as well. He was on commentary when Garcia was in the ring. And even when that's happening, it's about Garcia. It's not about Daddy Magic. He's there as Garcia's backup. He's sort of cheering for Garcia, but lending insight into what Garcia's doing. So it's not about him. It's about Garcia.
He's like a dad watching his son, you know? It really is.
Indeed.
No, I was going to say this about people with Chris Jericho. AEW is pretty much as important to Chris as Chris Jericho is anybody except Tony Khan. So, you know, hey, I know some people think he should go away. I just don't think that's something he's going to be interested in doing. Mm. It's his baby.
Yeah.
You know, you don't leave your baby unless you have to. So, you know, I've heard a lot of discussion, like maybe he should go away. Maybe he should just do commentary. Maybe he should just do stuff in the back. But, you know, it's like Chris Jericho, to some people, I know people don't understand how Q ratings and brand awareness work. To some people, and I'm not talking about the people listening to this show, Chris Jericho is probably still the biggest name they associate with AEW. I know we know about Will Ospreay and Okada and blah, 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 but most casual fans, Chris Jericho is still the biggest name they associate with AEW.
Yeah, and look, we're going to, so not to pull the curtain back too far, but we've discussed like different things we can do on this show to sort of make it have a bit of fun, like this after we, you know, discuss the tag matches. We're going to do a bracket on the music. And one of the brackets that we suggested was the MVP for the history of Dynamite. And I tell you what, when we get up to that, we're going to be cracking heads, but it's going to be tough to argue against Chris Jericho at different points. Like there's good arguments for other people as well, but there's a bloody good argument for Chris Jericho being the MVP of AEW since, dude, you know, dude, over its first 5 years. There's a really strong case for that, even despite where he's at now, which I think we'd both agree is not, you know, in the best place that he's been, probably the worst place. And as I think Rich Latta sort of put when I was listening to him, really almost struggling and trying to find something and desperately scrounging around to find something, which is not somewhere you want your, you know, one of your biggest stars, but that's where he's at right now. Hasn't always been the case. He's, you know, for a long time been one of the most important contributors.
Yes.
How did we get onto this, Floyd?
No. We were talking about Chris Jericho's commentary. It's just, but just think about it. You know, with his cachet and with who he is, he could force himself into bigger matches if he wanted to. You know what I mean? And he doesn't. He's trying to find different spots at different parts of the card to, you know, be useful, but not be the main attraction. I don't know. I don't know. I just had to throw in my support for Chris Jericho because, like I said, a lot of people agree that it's probably no AEW if it wasn't for Chris Jericho. So
he's definitely one of the most important parts of the puzzle.
I mean there's a lot of pieces, there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of reasons AEW exists. I'm just saying Chris Jericho right there. If you're gonna do an AEW Hall of Fame, I don't see how he's not first. So that's how I see it. Well, now so we get to talk about what's coming up this week. We got two big
just before we go, any final thoughts on the Best Friends versus Callis family?
But my final thoughts, great match. I'm probably at the end of the tournament, I'm probably not going to think about that match. hopefully I'm not thinking about that match, because I want to feel the escalation as we go into the further rounds of importance and desperation to get it. So hopefully I'm not, when I'm thinking about the best match from the show, best match from the tournament, which we're definitely going to discuss at the end of it, I don't expect to see this match on it, but it was definitely an important piece in establishing going forward.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely. As I said at the start, everything it needed to be, not much more. It didn't waste anyone's time. It was, you know, it was economical with what it did. It was to the point. Cassidy is the MVP, as he is so often in AEW in general, of this match. He was fantastic in it. Hobbs looked great. And the right result as well.
He doesn't get the half thumbs up. He gets the full thumbs up. That's how good he did. Full thumbs up for Orange Cassidy on that match.
Yep.
All right. And as we move along this week on Dynamite and Collision, the tournament continues. On the left side of the bracket, as I'm going to call it, the west side, we get the Young Bucks against their first round opponent and rematch from the original AEW Tag Team Tournament, Private Party. And then on Collision, we get FTR against qualifiers, the people that won the wild card match, the Infantry. Now, I do have a weird question, right? So the Infantry just wrestled. So don't you think they should probably do the other match in that bracket first and then come back to FTR and the Infantry? Seems weird that they're going straight to it and not doing that on the other side.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it's just more of a, you know, if you're doing scheduling, right? If this is real and the fight, you're making the Infantry fight, you know, like way sooner when they could get another week's rest to prepare for what is the biggest match of their career against one of the title teams in AEW, FTR. So it's just a random, nothing doesn't mean anything thought, but I'm just like, it feels like they should probably do the other match.
They should do Top Flight versus Big Bill. My only thought is, you know, if it feeds into some sort of story, you know, you laid out a pretty compelling story last week of how the Bucks would cost FTR potentially. And I don't know, maybe it's part of that.
The way it's setting up, the Young Bucks are going first. So if they're stick with this same order, the Young Bucks will be announced as in the finals of the tournament before FTR gets a chance if they are to win. So maybe it's going down that line. We'll see. But let's get into the match for Dynamite. Rematch from the original AEW tag team. At the time, the Young Bucks were fully face, right? Private Party was completely face. right?
Yep.
It was Two-Face teams. Private Party was pretty much a new team to most people watching AEW. I don't think this was quite their debut match, but, you know, I'd seen them do the Gin and Juice wherever. Hog, House of Glory. I believe they were the tag team champions there. Private Party had a good entrance music. They got you going up, and I even had a shirt at this time that said "This ain't water," because they would come out drinking out of their cup, and they'd be like, "This ain't water." They never said what it was, but it wasn't water. They wanted you to know that. And then you had the Young Bucks. I mean, the prohibitive favorites at that time. They you know, the founders of the company, you know, the EVPs, you know, the 100-time tag team champions over like 900 different companies, man. Anywhere they walked, they've been champion, you know? And and in that first match,
The first seeds in that tournament.
Yeah, the number one seeds. They got upset and rolled up by Private Party. I remember they were going for,
the Meltzer driver.
And he got knocked over, rolled up, and Private Party got the upset win. And I remember fans were not happy about the Young Bucks losing. Because if you know the early AEW fans, it was the Elite, the whole Elite, and nothing about the Elite. So they were not happy about the Young Bucks losing. There was actually a pretty significant backlash about the Young Bucks losing that match.
Really? See, my memory of it, and definitely from the people that I consumed in terms of the podcasts and media and the social media I consumed, were very happy about it because they could see that, like, this was the Young Bucks trying to make this young team, and there was a lot of joy with Private Party sort of partying in the stands afterwards with the fans, and everyone was excited and happy because this young team had beaten these up-and-comers and sort of, you know, told this underdog story. I always got the vibe that idea of people being annoyed that the Young Bucks were losing so much sort of came about a little bit later, but I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe we just walked in different circles at the time. I remember a lot of joy from it and people being really happy that for Private Party and kind of even remembering this match well. I think when I did for those of you who followed my work or followed the Social Suplex work a bit, when I did that countdown of the top matches from the first 2 years of AEW, I think the Bucks versus Private Party actually placed pretty well in that countdown, you know, in the top 50 matches from the first 2 years of the company, and largely because of that ending.
Yeah, and what I would say, and this is how I would differentiate, us hardcore fans, I was doing the show, I liked it, I thought it was completely different, I thought it was like, oh my God, you know, they did the upset kind of thing, but I was talking about like Twitter, you know, like Facebook, you know, those places where you saw, you know, like, you know, the outside fans. Why would the Young Bucks lose? Okay, yep. Why would it this? Of course, I love different type of endings. I love unexpected results. I want you to go against the grain if you can, but in this case, you know, sometimes people don't want you to go against the grain. They just want you to, they want to see their boys win. And I just remember that, like I said, it wasn't significant. But as, you know, I was doing All Things Elite, you know, I was trying to stay on Twitter, trying to see what the reactions are so I could react to it on the show. It just, there was a little bit of a backlash. They did not want to see the Young Bucks lose.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but my recollection of it's different.
No, absolutely.
And I think probably in hindsight, was it the greatest move? Like booking, I think because of what's happened with Private Party, where they like probably really haven't had a match that's topped that since, and it's been a long time. You know, it's possibly in hindsight seen as not the greatest thing that's ever happened, and perhaps maybe the Young Bucks should have done that, or, you know, if they're going to try and do this with Private Party, then maybe they should have gone all the way and, you know, not necessarily lost in the semifinals in the next round, straight after beating the Young Bucks. But, you know, in the moment, I really liked it.
No, and I thought everyone, you know, like as far as the hardcore fans, which is what I refer to us as, we all liked it. We all liked it, but, you know, it was definitely thought about. And I remember you talking about the match, and I think about fondly on it when I go back to it. But, yeah, I do remember a little bit of a backlash of the Young Bucks, the names of the company, losing. Grr.
No, I think to go to the result of that match, I think they obviously have to play off it in this match. You know, there has to be – I even think that exact spot has to happen where they set up for the Meltzer driver, but this time, you know, instead of getting held – because what happened was Matt Jackson got held onto and then Nick Jackson got held onto and Matt Jackson got rolled up in the ring. Nick Jackson has to look behind him and kick Mark Quinn or Isaiah Cassidy in the face, whoever comes at him to hold his legs. And then they hit the Tony Khan driver, as it's now called.
Yes, I was about to say.
Like they have to have that exact moment happen, I think.
Yeah, they can't run it back because there is no more Meltzer driver. It's the TK driver now.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to it. And it's funny because Private Party, they were both faces the first time they wrestled. They're both heels the second time they wrestle. So I think you're going to see cheating on both sides.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like what are some like kind of wacky spots that they could potentially do, like the Young Bucks could potentially do, particularly to play with their new characters. And I had a couple of thoughts. So the first one was have maybe in a promo segment beforehand, have Matthew and Nicholas Jackson use their full passport names, as they say. Have Matthew and Nicholas offer to buy the contracts of the Private Party just to sort of play off the never-ending contract drama that there was with Isaiah Cassidy's contract at one point where, like, at one point Matt Hardy owned it. At another point, I think Andrade owned it. At another point, I think maybe even Rush owned it at one point. I can't keep track. Maybe Ethan Page own it, or was Ethan Page also owned? I can't remember.
Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway or something. I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, yes.
They should just offer to buy the buy their contracts and then they don't have to wrestle the match.
As a
thing for that. And the other thing I thought they could do was just to I was trying to think what's in like the wrestling zeitgeist at the moment. And I think something that they could do, and I don't know if it would work or not, and it would definitely raise some hackles, is when Private Party go to do the silly string. So, you know, the silly string move that they do?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so where one of them sort of bends over and the other one flips off the back of the other one at the side of the ring, have Nicholas, who's the hothead in the team, yell out to them and get in front of them and say, "That's a stupid move. We're not taking that," as like a play on the Maxine Dupri and Candice LeRae thing that happened on Raw. What do you think of that, Floyd?
That would be great. You know, if you really want to do the evil thing, because I have been having like so much fun fantasy booking this. First of all, Private Party gets to the show late because their travel got jacked up.
Yes.
It's like somehow we had to fly all the way to here before we got to here. It's like we almost didn't make it for the show, right? and then they don't have backstage passes, so they can't get backstage, and they finally get in, and they're all disheveled and tired, and then, you know, the Young Bucks try to take advantage of that. I just like that's the old.
They get fined beforehand for wearing street clothes rather than a nice suit and jacket.
Dude, if their luggage accidentally gets lost and they have to wrestle in street clothes, that would be hilarious, and they get fined. Like this is me. My brain is very much because I've seen this and I know this name is bad. And name the name I'm about to compare it to. Actually, I'm not going to say the name, but this seems like a double version of the evil boss. I'm not going to say what evil boss.
Yep.
The double version of the evil boss. So I'm thinking of all the stuff that I remember from back in the day of the evil boss character. And I'm just like, man, you do it two times now. Now you got two people to be the evil boss. And, you know, And it'd just be great if they just start, like, messing with people's schedules. Like, dude, somehow we're at a, it's like, why are we not at the, you know, the show hotel? Why are we not here with the other wrestlers in the hotel? You got us like 20 miles away. Just really drive home the fact that the Young Bucks are trying to make it as inconvenient as possible if you have to wrestle them.
Yeah. The thing I like that they've done with their characters in terms of like the boss, they're really putting their own spin on it. And I think they're updating it as well, particularly the different dynamic are like two different kinds of managers that I think, you know, if we've worked in large companies, we've all had experience with, you know, the one that just like flies off the rail at nothing and, you know, expects that you should just swallow their, you know, this verbal diatribe and verbal assault that they're like laying out at you. And then the other one, just like the spineless, sniveling guy who never actually, who tries to be your friend, but never actually stands up for anything. They're like playing on those two different kinds of middle management so well. And yeah, I think it would be interesting to see how it would look, you know, with Nicholas going, you know, going off at them for, you know, not wearing the right clothes or whatever. And then Matthew saying, let's take this offline. We'll, you know, we'll have a Zoom meeting about this. We'll go, we'll take it up with the other departments, you know, the travel department to, oh, if they're talking about travel, they have to talk about like one of them, they have to ride a train, right? Like they have to ride a train to get to the state, to get to the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't have a car booked for them, so they had to ride the train.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, they've got to take that up with the travel department. This is, you know, this isn't something that we're concerned with, but we'll take it up with the travel department.
Like, that's so below our pay grade. We don't know what's going on there. And now, the thing is, again, I'm not trying to harp on this, but Private Party has been not used, not hot, anything. So you really don't have a lot of anticipation towards this match. This is where my expanded tournament comes from. Private Party has won a match, like looked good, looked crisp in their match. Now they're coming against the Young Bucks, the rematch from it. There's a little bit more vibe. There's a little more energy to this match. But since it's the first round match and Private Party really isn't on TV that much, there isn't a lot of anticipation other than the fact that this match has happened before. And Private Party is actually 1-0 against the Young Bucks. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I just think there could be, you know, there's something there. I feel like there could be more. I feel like there could be more. But I am looking forward to this. I want to see if I don't get at least a little EVP shenanigans, I'm going to be upset, you know.
Oh, there has to be. There has to be. They're solidifying that character. There has to be.
Yes.
And this one really is. It's a nod to the long term fans, the guys who have been watching since day one of Dynamite. I think a lot of the anticipation comes from the people who watched that original match and are kind of excited that they're running it back because they haven't done it again. They have, you know. Much of the reason is probably because of injury, but they have sort of protected this match, which was like sort of a special moment in early Dynamite. And, you know, now they're running it back. I'm excited, but purely because they're running back what was once a, you know, quite a special moment.
Yes, and before the match, you'll probably get the little video showing what happened.
100%.
And I hope they show it, and then they do the interview with Marvez so they can take out their anger on Marvez for them showing the match. Like, who approved that video? Who approved that? You know, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I think there'll be like a lot of extracurriculars, but we kind of laid out our predictions at the beginning of this tournament, but for your official prediction, Sam, who do you have winning this match?
The Young Bucks.
And I have to go
the minute that it comes on my betting app.
Yeah.
Sorry, for those of you who don't know, I sometimes put money on pro wrestling, which is not necessarily the most financially sound idea, and I don't think you should do it yourself, but I do because I'm a degenerate. And I'll probably be putting money on the Young Bucks to win.
Yes,
because I'm very confident that they will.
Yeah, as I say, you're looking forward to winning that 3 cents, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to be like that. Like, the odds are not going to be high.
Yes, it's going to be like a negative 2,000 or something crap like that. Yep. No, but yeah, it's going to be a fun day. It's going to be a fun match. I'm going with the Young Bucks, too. As you know, I have them winning it all, but it might adjust if the storytelling changes, you know, if they need any more from that. But I truly believe it's going to be like, yeah, it's just going to be the Young Bucks winning. Dastardly fashion, but winning.
Yep.
All right. The next matchup and the main event of the week, the big match of the week, the match of the week, the match that matters more than any other match you will see this week. We got the two-time AEW Tag Team Champions, FTR, versus the Infantry, Mr. Sean Dean, the Captain Sean Dean, and Mr. Bad News and Tattoos, Carly Bravo. Now, I already know who's going to be the best dressed tag team in this match. Not even close. Sorry, I mean, FTR, you know, I got all your gear. I love it. But I don't think you can reach the swag level, the drip level of the Infantry.
Pink with camo.
Yes, pink with camo. I don't know if they're going to bring out the pink this week, but we're going to see. They, you know, people don't like to wear the same thing week after week, so I want to see what they do with it.
I don't know. FTR have done that pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like infantry has to get their wins where they can, and they're going to get their win on the intro and the gear. That's where they're going to win, you know.
I will clarify one thing you said, Floyd. Yeah. Most anticipated match of the week. I will say that this is more anticipated for me than the other tag team quarterfinal match, but it's just slightly behind Swerve Strickland versus Konosuke Takeshita and Katsuyori Shibata versus Will Ospreay. I think those two are a bit they're my number one and two, and I think you'll forgive me for that.
Okay,
but
it's the most anticipated match on Collision. Okay,
yes, so far.
Yes, nothing.
It's the only match on Collision. Yeah. So far. yeah, look, these two teams did have a very good promo segment, like a compelling promo segment. And Infantry came across as very charismatic, very fiery, and like they had a point to prove. And what I want to see in this match is I want to see the Infantry get out to an early lead. I want to see them, you know, getting the payoff of that bravado that they had early on, and also learning from what House of Black did to them last week, and maybe like attack before the bell, because that's what happened last week. The Infantry hit their pose, House of Black attacked before the bell, and literally they maybe got like two or three moves in before they, you know, flopped, you know, they managed to scrape out a win simply because Mike Briscoe interrupted. But I'd like to see the Infantry attack before the bell, get that early lead, and maybe the reason that they lose is because that cockiness that comes with, you know, the charisma and the fire and the determination they've got. Maybe there's a level of cockiness. They get out to an early lead, start to showboat a little bit, but instead of pressing the attack when they should be, and, you know, you can't let a veteran team like FTR get back into the match when you've got that sort of advantage. But I'd like to see them, I guess I'd like to see the Infantry continue to learn lessons from the matches that they have. They, you know, potentially learn a lesson from House of Black. Don't turn your back on the team that you're about to face. Maybe sometimes it's okay to attack before the bell to get that advantage. And then maybe the lesson they can learn from FTR is once you've got an advantage, you've got to press it. You don't let up.
So the way I see this match working out, and I think it's best if your goal is to give Infantry the shine and make them look good. Mm-hmm. I think FTR is going to have to work like old FTR, like almost like I wouldn't go as far as to say be heels, but okay. I think they're going to have to work the like they're gonna cut the ring off, work a body part, that kind of thing. And because if you looked at what infantry's whole thing is that they survive. They survive, they survive, they survive. So you have FTR get one of
them
in the
corner.
That was
the promo that they cut.
Yeah.
You're correct. That was the promo they cut after the House of Black match.
So you get FTR working over one of them, like really, like completely master of tag team, what they do. Working over, and you build to that amazing hot tag, and you give that moment where you just think, oh my god, they are gonna do it, the infantry's gonna do it, Shatter Machine 1-2-3, you know, that kind of thing. And I just think that that's the best way to get this going. I think the reason I say FCR is the best tag team in the world doesn't have anything to do with them winning it all the time. My big thing is you can put them in any type of match and they can make it work. But I think where FTR excels over pretty much every tag team except the other tag team in this tournament, the Young Bucks, is they make their opponents look amazing. And I just think in this match, you want to level up the infantry, whether it's whether it's to be used in ROH, whether it's the matter in AEW, whatever you want to do, your goal is to level up the infantry. That's how I see it. I think you work the old school FTR style because it does build up the anticipation to that hot tag, and you get to going there, and like I said, you get us to that point. You edge us. You get us right to the edge. And then you take it back. And I if you do it right, FTR should get booed at the end of this match.
The interesting thing that we've done, Floyd, is both of us have come into a saying like, how can the infantry look great? And we've both taken very different approaches, but we've both had that goal in mind. So I've picked up the cockiness and the sort of arrogance that they sort of, and like edge they displayed in that initial promo segment they had with FTR, and thought like, let's have them capitalize on that and potentially play more, lean more into the heelish side, and then have, you know, have them get out to that early lead, and that's them looking good. But then they need to, you know, then FTR catch up because, you know, they're the veterans and they have the ring now to take advantage of a small mistake. Whereas you've gone the opposite to me, but we've both got the same idea. You've seen them talking about how they survive in their promo after the House of Black match and gone, okay, well, I'm going to have FTR put them through the ringer again, just the way, in a similar way that House of Black did, but potentially have a more exciting hot tag than what happened with House of Black last week.
Yes.
We both want the same thing. We've just kind of gone about it with different things and picked different elements what they do.
I think, and this, like, my thing about your style is that it works if they win in a more dominant faction last week. They come out and they just beat the House of Black. They hit the boot camp, get the 1-2-3. They come into this match cocky, right? But they kind of banana peeled their way into this match, you know? So it's like, that's why I was like, but, you know, honestly, it could be. They might think, hey, luck only comes to the prepared. So they could come in a little bit more cocky. But I think what goes along with what they're kind of going for is the survival aspect. Either way works.
Well, look, I'd be fine with either way, honestly. I think your way works just as well.
The mission is to get to use the infantry. The mission is to make the infantry look amazing. If I don't come out of this match thinking the infantry is amazing, the mission has been failed, whether they win or lose.
Yeah, I never really saw FTR build a hot tag the way they did when they were the Revival. And part of that could have been because the majority of that, like their biggest heel run was when they first came in during COVID, and it was, you know, limited to no, started out with no crowds and then limited crowds. But you know, like when they were the Revival, I think like one of the greatest hot tags I've ever seen was the take over Dallas when American Alpha had what's his name? Jordan.
Yes, Jason Jordan.
Jason Jordan come in, and that was just one of the the place blew off the roof, and that was all because of the way that the Revival at the time, these two guys worked up to that hot tag, worked them up to that hot tag. So if they could do that, if they've still got that magic in them, if they could do that, it would be, fantastic.
And that's what they were built on. That's who they are. It's like everything else has just been them evolving, but that, the limb work, all that stuff, that's the team I fell in love with. That is the team that I am a fan of. It was that team. And it's just like, I remember people would say, man, they only have great matches with great teams. And I'm like, I mean, isn't that how that works? Isn't that wrestling? I don't know.
Well, it's like, show me the other great match that Enzo and Cass had, right?
Yes. I mean,
it's almost similar to, it's very similar to the Young Bucks. Like, show me the other great match that Private Party have had. Yeah. Show me the other great match that Enzo and Cass have had.
Yeah, they're the base. Yeah. And when you're the base, you need the other team to do the shine part. So, I don't know. I just think a playback to the old FTR, the Revival, a little revival of the Revival in that tag team style would go a long way to making the Infantry look amazing this week.
I mean, it was the Captain Sean Dean that said the name, right?
Yeah.
Did he bring that onto himself?
Yes. I'm just saying, he's like, I'm waiting on the promo to say, oh, so you want the Revival? We'll give you the Revival.
Yep.
Yeah, no, but I'm looking forward to this match a lot because, honestly, it's like, you look at these four, I'm a big fan of the Infantry from ROH. I didn't even see them getting the quote-unquote call-up, but they've been put into an important position that means they are trusted to work with one of the best tag teams in the world. I'm looking forward to how they work together. I think it's going to be a banger. I think this is, I think this week you're going to get what I was talking about as far as because you didn't give us the huge tournament, you got to give us amazing matches. I think we're going to get two amazing matches this week.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
I'm very much looking forward to both of these.
Yes, so that is our preview of the tag match. And again, we don't have a lot, so we're going to break it down all the way, but it's going to be fun doing the results of those matches as we talk about it and looking forward to next week, because next week, I only can assume, next week we're going to get Top Flight and Big Bill, and that's probably going to happen on Collision. And then on the other side, we're going to get Or the Best Friends versus the Undisputed Kingdom. I got it right. I almost called them the United Kingdom again, but they are the Undisputed Kingdom. So we'll probably get both of those tag matches next week. So we'll be looking forward to talking about the results of these matches and preview. So we'll actually have a little more to talk about next week.
We will, yes.
Yes, yes.
But can we move along to
the
musical bracket?
Yes.
So just as a fun thing I thought we could chuck at the end, we might do some more of these in the future. I saw on the AEW Twitter that they posted another bracket saying March Madness, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And it was for the best AEW entrance theme. So I thought, we're Bracket Madness. We can break down other brackets that AEW put out. So let's break down this bracket and do our own who we think the best best entrance music in AEW has been. Now, I'll run through what the bracket is. It doesn't have a lot of the licensed tunes. So like the, Where Is My Mind or Jane or, Metallica, Unforgiven by Metallica, Seek and Destroy by Metallica. Those sorts of ones aren't included on here. I think that's fair enough. I'm happy to leave them off. Not in all Wild Things not on here. And I think that's fair enough. I'm happy to leave those off. It's kind of like, what are the, the regular entrance themes that aren't a licensed song, except for one instance, but I think it's fair enough. So we'll go through what they've put. On the left side, you've got Battle Cry versus Judas. Then you've got, so that's Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho, obviously, their themes. Then on the left side, on the bottom, you've got I Fell against Big Pressure. So I fell for which is Darby Allin's theme versus Big Pressure, which is Swerve's theme. On top right, we've got Ghost Town Triumph, Hangman Page's theme against All About the Boom, which is Adam Cole's theme. And then on the bottom right, Somewhere in a Dream, which is Tony Storm's current theme, the Timeless Tony character's entrance theme, against Dark Side of TR, which is, of course, the team we're just talking about, FTR's newest theme. So that's their, you know, their second theme that they've had since they came in. So Floyd, the things that I'll ask you afterwards, but the things that I look for in a good entrance theme, I wrote down, has to be a good song, obviously, has to be something that's enjoyable to listen to, has to be very quickly identifiable as, you know, this wrestler's theme, and it stands out from other wrestling themes as well. A really good one, and so this is, you know, if it has this, it's improving. It has to say something about the team, either that's musically, so the way the music is structured or sounds says something about the wrestler or the team that it's for, or lyrically it says something, or ideally both. If you know, if it's got music and lyrics together, they say something about the person that is wrestling. And then a bonus is some sort of crowd participation in some way, or it's been used in interesting ways for interesting entrances. What do you look for in before we get into maybe some honorable mentions we can think of? I've noted some down and get into the actual bracket. What are the things you look for in a good wrestling entrance theme?
Need you be able to sing along to it.
Yep.
I know it's not as important to some people, and it actually just flies the song, but if you can't, like, if it doesn't have a simple beat that the fans can, you know, sing along to, keep up with, I think that works against it.
Yeah. I can immediately see where we're going to have a fight then. Yes. In this bracket.
The immediate recognition of is there's absolutely important. It's your signature, because I always say this when it comes to a professional wrestler, and it's, I always say, people talk about bell to bell, and I'm like, hey, if that's what you think a professional wrestler is, bell to bell, more power to you. I always measure my wrestlers curtain to curtain, from when their music hits to how they leave the ring. The whole presentation is what makes a professional wrestler. And I always said some people's presentation is so much better than the rest of the world's that it evens out that they might not be the best in ring. So I was like, it has to add to your presentation. It can't just be something to get to the ring. If it doesn't add to the presentation of who you are as a character, yeah, I'm going to, it has to elevate you. To use the word of one of my favorite theme songs in AEW right now, if it doesn't elevate you,
everyone's loving that one.
I loved it in New Japan. If the song doesn't elevate you, then we got a problem.
So a couple on, I agree with all that, and we kind of echoed each other's thoughts. Particularly, I think, like, elevating them, saying something with them about them musically or lyrically, and the, you know, crowd participation thing, I think we both brought that out. So a few honorable mentions that I have that weren't listed in the bracket that AEW put out, and look, honestly, I'd probably substitute a few of these around if I was doing it my own way, but this is what AEW put out, so it's what we're going to go with. It's live. I love Ricky Stark. That's Ricky Stark's theme. I love a big miss on here, and I don't know how they missed it, is Arrival, Sting's theme. Man, that is, like, I think that's probably, what's the bloke's name? How am I forgetting?
Mikey Ruckus.
I think that's pretty much Mikey Ruckus's best work, honestly, Arrival. The Hybrid 2's original theme is such a banger. I love that one, even though it's, you know, it's pretty simple. I also love Cold World by Eddie Kingston theme. And you got to shout out One Problem, Marina Shafir's theme.
So you took my
Rich Ladders on
you
it.
Literally, you took my answer. I only had one and you took it.
What's that?
One Problem. That was the only one I was going to say. Shout out to Rich. You got to have Marina Shafir's, because I honestly just think it's a banger.
It's a great theme song.
I do want to shout out someone that is no longer with the company. I forgot his name. Not the wrestler's name, but I forgot the guy that does the music. He worked with WWE for a little while. Sean Spears.
The chairman theme.
The chairman thing. I said this. The dude, I love Sean Spears, and there's no way this doesn't come off as an insult. I apologize in advance. But I was like, that dude had a main event theme for not a main event wrestler. That music went so hard, and he would stand in the middle with the chair, and then he'd have the thing over his head, and then he had the spotlight, and I was just like, this should be a main eventer's intro. This is like the best. I really thought it was the best intro in wrestling, like from the spotlight and then the music hitting, and I was just like, I mean, honestly, it's on my work. I love that song so much. It's on my workout. Play it loud. Oh yeah, man, I love that song. I love it.
Yeah,
if this was on the bracket, it would win in a landslide. Yep. I loved it, even though because I just thought like the moment he played that theme, I thought more of Sean Spears.
Yep, I agree. I agree with you there, particularly given like the whole package, the entrance, and. The theme was a great package.
I'm like,
I just thought of, which I hadn't included, was the Redeemer theme for Miro with horns. Yes. And there's even like, and there's an extended version that would have been amazing for, I mean, it still could be. He's still, acting like he's not signed to the company anymore. But there's an extended version you can see on the AEW Spotify, which has like this woman chanting in a different language to start with. And it sounds incredible. It could be if he ever does have another featured spot, I don't know if he ever will, but if he ever has like another featured spot where he's a champion, or has like this giant match, having like this person chanting and then the drums and the horns and everything kick in a bit later, could be an awesome special entrance for him. So shout outs to that one as well.
I have to give the shout out to the person that did Sean Spears' song, Josiah Williams. Featuring Wrestling Flow, and it was called Reflection of Perfection. So, dude, I love this song.
Yep.
Yes.
And look, much love out to, before we get into this bracket, I like how diverse AEW's themes are. There's like lots of different people who've contributed. You know, you've got like, I'm repeating a lot of the things. If you want to talk about music, actually, there was a great episode of VOW Flagship, which had Rich Ladder on it from Social Suplex. Also, Andrew Rich, who produces a song called Music of the Mat, which is about. They talked in depth about wrestling themes in ways that, you know, because Rich has put together, like actually written musical, you know, music themes for wrestlers. He understands it so well. But one of the things they highlighted was how diverse what AEW presents is. And I have to echo that, you know, like, and that's a good thing because it means that wrestlers feel different. And that's great. I think that's a really good thing.
And I did it again. I did forget one more theme.
Yep,
Take Flight, Sammy Guevara's theme, my boy Montezzi. Love it. I love that theme. I love that theme. I don't know if it would have made the bracket at this point after the years of different music coming out, but I always love that theme. I also wanted to give that one a shout out, honorable mention.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get into the difficult decisions, Floyd. So the first one, and this is an agonizing one, honestly. Battle Cry versus Judas. What are your thoughts?
Dude, I would have moved this bracket around because I feel like those are both number one seeds.
I know.
And they got to go against each other. I would have put like Battle Cry versus Dark Side of TR and then Judas versus Somewhere in the Dream.
Yep.
I was like, this is two number one seeds. I say this, my favorite... One of my favorite sports moments, not wrestling, just sports moments, is singing along with Judas. There is no way I can't move Judas in this round to me. It's just, I remember the first time, apparently it happened before I heard it live, but the first time, I think it was on the boat in Jericho, on a Jericho cruise, and they came out and the music stopped and they kept singing along. And you saw Jericho, he kind of like, it felt like he was getting emotional, like almost tearing up because they're singing his words of his band back to him, like a concert as he's about to do what he does best, one of the best in the world, and that's be a professional wrestler. Still one of my favorite moments. I heard a choir sing it at Revolution. I think that was 20.
You saw him sing it at Wembley.
Yeah, sing it at Wembley. Yeah, I have to go with Judas.
Yep. Yeah. So for me, as I said, this is a tough one, and not just because, like, obviously these are two incredible themes, but they're also very similar themes. Like, they're both sort of hard rock. They both say a lot about the characters of the wrestler. Like, I once wrote when I was still writing, I wrote a full column about how lyrically Judas, like, weirdly foreshadows Jericho turning on the WWE. Like, you know, I've turned my back on everything I've ever loved and leave it all behind. And then how he would treat AEW, like how his early character would treat AEW, as like, this is all about, it's actually this thing you've created, it's all about me, and how, and showing how great Chris Jericho is in the lyric, like, you are innocence personified, I'll drag you down and sell you out. But Battle Cry, you know, like, that's also got those shout outs of like One Winged Angel, Devil's Sky, Best Bout Machine. And it's a mashup. It's kind of the way Kenny Omega described it when he was making it and trying to work out what he wanted as his entrance music in AEW, was he wanted it to be like elements of Devil's Sky, which was his New Japan theme, but also combining with his like Mega Man inspired DDT theme. So for those of you who don't know who Mega Man is, that's like an old video game character from like the 80s. Floyd, you might remember him from when you were a kid.
I played it on the Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly. So he kind of achieved that by mashing these two together. So you've got like two very similar ones, and like, oh man, I went back and forth on this, but I think for me, I have to agree with you that it goes to Judas, because even though I probably even enjoy Battle Cry better as a song, Judas has the crowd singing tradition, which is like, at one point, I mean, as we said, like, now at this point we've talked about Chris Jericho, he's not, you know, the most popular person in AEW anymore, but there was a point where that was like a huge part of going to an AEW show, was getting to sing Judas. And particularly, like, it was really starting to take off just before the pandemic hit, and they managed to keep it alive until the point where you had crowds come back and everyone wanted to sing it. And then they even managed to do it without any band. They just had people singing it, because it was such a fixture in AEW crowds. MJF said that Jericho can't have any entrance music, and the crowd sung it back to him, and gave him the entrance music without any backing music. So when I was like looking at what makes a great entrance, like what makes good music, good song, identifiable, something to say about both teams, either musically or lyrically, both these tick that. But the way that Judas has became a fixture and had those special entrances, I think I have to go with Judas as well.
Yep, big emotional draw with Judas there.
Absolutely. So let's move on. We've got next up, we've got I Fell for Darby Allin and Big Pressure for Swerve. Floyd, when you first heard I Fell, did you have to Google it and find out if it was actually Darby Allin singing it?
No, I asked you and you told me, but I did not have to Google it. I sammed it all the way. I was like, I have no idea what that song is. You told me. So
I feel like it could be him singing it, right? Like, it sounds like him, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. And, you know, he does fall a lot. So it's the perfect title of a Darby Allin theme. I like Darby Allin's theme. I immediately put when his music hits, I'm like, I know I'm about to get a banger. And I truly believe it
just
elevates.
Just those opening chords.
Yeah, I truly believe it elevates him. Mm. But nobody's music, no one in wrestling other than the blonde guy in WWE that's about the main event, music has elevated him more than Big Pressure Swerve. Swerve is amazing. He wrestles amazing. I think the music, Prince Nana dancing, all of that, everything that goes into it has elevated Swerve from mid-carder, guy you thought put on really good matches, to AEW God level. And that is why his song will win. Because when I said it, the music has to elevate you. no music in wrestling except for Cody's has elevated a wrestler as much as Big Pressure has for Swerve.
I don't know if I'm willing to make that historical point.
I'm talking about current oh, okay, wrestling. Yep, current wrestling.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It is the song of 2320. I mean, it's about to, just like Swerve is getting a lot of pressure from Will Ospreay, this theme is getting a lot of pressure from Will Ospreay's theme. But yeah, it is the song of AEW in 2023, 2024, early 2024.
It made me dance in public. I do not dance in public.
I want to go just quickly. I do want to just shed some love for I Fell, because I don't think it could fit Alan any better. Like, as I said, we both thought that he was singing it when we first heard it. Even just some of the lyrics. So the second verse, it doesn't matter what came before. I felt pain and I want it more. Like, that is Darby Allin. And then there's like, I'm not settled until it's all done and it's right. I split my head open last night. Like, that is just so him. And like, it hasn't got him over to the way that, you know, Big Pressure has got him over, but I think it's underrated, like the aesthetic that it helped create for him. You know, like the dark brooding, the chugging guitars, the minor tone. It could not fit Darby Allin better. This theme song. And as I said, like lyrically, it sums him up. It's immediately identifiable, but yeah, look what Big Pressure has done for Swerve. Like, It's similar. I don't think it's quite, like, you looking at the lyrics, I don't think it quite says as much about Swerve's character. Maybe that might be controversial, saying that, but you know, we're splitting hairs here when we're comparing those sorts of things. But yeah, the way it's got him over with the Prince Nana dance, it has to go on too. So we'll be having Big Pressure versus Judas in the second one. I think we're about to fight though, Floyd. Because we've got Hangman Page, Ghost Town Triumph, and then All About the Boom by Adam Cole. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'm going to go first. This is really hard for me. I think Hangman's music, you know, that opening line, you got the horse, you know, going through with the, you know, with the little noise at the beginning. And it feels like an updated version of an old Western theme.
Yep.
I think if you look at all of these themes with I Fell with Darby, no music sums up who their character is as well as Ghost Town Triumph does for Hangman. And I believe at one time, man, that music hits. Oh my God, it was like the crowd went wild. Yes, the crowd went wild, and I saw him ride out on a fucking horse one time with that song, and it just fit. It fit. But come on. I'm all about the boom. Adam Cole, baby. I mean, yeah, and you gotta ding 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 ding, and then you know, lines up and everybody's got the shaking hand and you go, boom! Adam Cole, baby! It's the crowd participation. It beats it. No, and like if the fans were going like doom, doo, 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 you know, you heard the fans making the noise to Ghost Town Triumph, I would probably give it to the Hangman. But come on, All About the Boom, heel, face, whatever. You know Adam Cole's coming. It has all the signatures of what is Adam Cole. That this character that he's been getting over for almost 20 years. I remember the first time I saw him do Adam Cole Baby. Like, no one in the crowd did Adam Cole Baby with him. And now it's like the signature. He raises his hand, Adam Cole, baby. Whether he says it or not, the crowd's yelling it. Then the boom. God, it breaks my heart. I have to go with All About the Boom.
Okay, let me try and convince you otherwise, Floyd. I am not going to say the boom moment isn't a great piece of like crowd interaction. But can I ask you, what does it actually say about Adam Cole's character? And I'll let you Google that for a second, because I'm gonna talk a bit, but I want you to answer that.
Okay.
Because what does it say about Adam Cole's character, and what does his catchphrase, what does that boom, and what does the Adam Cole baby actually say about his character beyond being a fun catchphrase that people can join in with? What does it say, like, more deeply about his character? Because, like, as you said, Hangman Page's one suits it down to the T. And when I'm looking at the other things that I've laid out as criteria, good song and needs to be identifiable, Adam Cole's is just another, this is like a good version of a noughties era Jim Johnson theme. It's just another butt rock guitar drum song. It like, as an actual song, it beyond the boom part, it is pretty much indistinguishable from like every single other wrestling theme that there has been out there. But who else has a Western inspired theme like Ghost Town Triumph? And yeah, like he's ridden in on a horse to it. They had like the probably my favorite AEW entrance ever, which was the slightly modified version that he used of this when they did the elimination tag in 2021 with the Dark Order. And they had the video package that used this theme and then flowed into the entrance where they had the lights lighting up and they all walked to the entrance. They all walked to the ring together. He walked to the ring with the Dark Order together.
Oh, that purple and black gear. So amazing.
Yep, that purple. And if you want to talk a chant, like, what chant has been like more consistently over in AEW than Cowboy Shit? And that Cowboy Shit chant fits perfectly with the tempo of Ghost Town Triumph. And as you said, like, it perfectly sums up who Hangman Adam Page is. He's a little bit of a throwback to something that was previous, but he is also modern and up to beat. You've got that old school Western theme, but you've still got like a beat underneath it, like a modern beat underneath it that's propelling it forward. This is a guy who's a bit of a throwback, but he's still modern and explosive. So I'm going to lay that challenge out to you, Floyd. If you can tell me what All About the Boom says about who Adam Cole's character is beyond just being about a couple catchphrases, then maybe you can take this, or have I convinced you?
I'm going to say this. What is Adam Cole's finishers called? Do you know what it's called?
I'm trying to remember what it was called in NXT.
But in AEW,
I want to screw your point up.
AEW, it's called The Boom. The song is saying it's all about his finisher. So it is telling you that it's about him. But in a way that I am going to break one of my closest friends' hearts, Tyler Ballman, one of the biggest Adam Cole fans on this earth, I have to concede the point. I think you didn't have to convince me much, but you did convince me. I would have to go with Hangman's theme in this case.
Yeah. And as I said at the start, we're splitting hairs here. All About the Boom is a great entrance, but is not better than Hangman's. Anyway, let's continue on. This next one's a absolute walk in the park somewhere in a dream, which is Tony Storm's timeless Tony Storm's current entrance theme and Dark Side of TR. I think we can wave it through, right?
It's so funny because these are both shout outs to old times past, right? Tony Storm's a little bit of the Gold Dust, the old timey characters. FTR is a shout out to their favorite tag team, the Midnight Express. And it really did. Like, when I first heard it, I was like, is this the Midnight Express theme? And it was the Midnight Express theme with a little ruckus turn on it. But I have to betray my boys, because I actually, admittedly, even though it is my ringer, I actually prefer it like every other theme they've had more than this theme. So you talk about character, immediately knowing who it is, blah, blah, blah. I got to go with Somewhere in a Dream.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was going to...
You were going to go...
Dark Side of TR?
I laid it out to you. I'm not the hugest fan of this theme.
Okay. Well, see, for me, like, as I said, like, a top thing for me is good song. And I just don't enjoy – I don't feel hyped when I hear Toni Storm's entrance music in this one. I preferred her, like, her heart –
The one that Mariah May comes out to.
Yeah, she's currently. That's what's next. That's like, I think that's a much better theme.
No, I'm going to Rich. I'm throwing a fly in your ointment here.
Really? Dark Side of TR does say a bit about FTR. Like, as I said, with like Hangman Adam Page, it kind of alludes to what they are, but it's a bit updated.
Throwback theme.
Look, if you want to wave somewhere in a dream through, I'll be happy to take it.
I mean, neither one's going to lose next. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the other side of the bracket. I've got a heart out in 5 minutes, Floyd. So
okay.
We're going to have to move quickly. We've got Judas versus Big Pressure.
If you 2 years ago, I would have go Judas, but currently I'm going Big Pressure. So Big Pressure.
Look, I want to fight for Judas here because of how iconic it was.
Yes.
Like, they sung him to the ring with no entrance music and got every word correct.
We're doing this bracket in 2024, so I'm going with Big Pressure.
Yeah, look, okay. Big Pressure's got the form, right?
Yes.
Oh my God, what have we done? We're going to end up with Page and Hangman Page and Swerve in the final.
Yes.
Tunnel talk, eat your heart out, guys. Okay, yes. Somewhere in a Dream. So are we just conceding immediately that Somewhere in a Dream gets beaten by Ghost Town Triumph?
Dude, Somewhere in the Dream and Dark Side FTR would have been the bottom seeds if it was me.
Okay. Look, I thought we were going to be fighting about Dark Side of TR versus... Ghost Town Triumph in the semis here, Floyd. I really did.
I love my boys, and it gets me hype when their music comes on, but I would not rate it as a high theme versus any other theme.
Just quickly, like, the say yeah from WWE is like,
that's my favorite.
That's
thing.
Iconic. That's great. That's a great thing. You liked the Macoon sort of, not ripoff of it, but like inspired version of that.
My alarm is still Macoon song.
There you go. Waking up to that.
Yeah, my man. Because I actually liked
it. Get you up out of bed.
Yes, I know. My alarm is still the Macoon version of FTR song. I preferred it. I mean, I don't know why. I just thought it came off harder. I just think Dark Side of FTR, even though you do get the fans, you know, when they were at the hour singing along to it, you know, doing the beat or whatever. I don't know. I just don't feel like it announces their presence with authority.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what it is. I don't feel like it announces their presence with authority. Okay.
There you go. See, I think it's their best theme they've had. Well, I much prefer it to the Matt Coon one. I think it's up there with the WWE. Anyway, let's continue on. I'm just so surprised by this.
You got a heart out in 5 minutes.
We can
talk about it more next week if you want to, but I've never been that huge a fan of it.
So the final, we've got Big Pressure from Swerve Strickland versus Hangman Adam. It always comes down to these two at the moment, doesn't it?
Yes.
Ghost Town Triumph. Look, we've both laid out our cases.
And just like Swerve's record against Hangman, he remains undefeated. Big Pressure by Apply. Flash garments.
I prefer a lot about Ghost Town Triumph, and I could go on about it. But I think you're right that, like, the way that it's helped get Swerve on, particularly since they did the remix version, slowed down, it's got guitars, works really well in a big crowd. I'm going to have to agree with you. Swerve takes it.
Yes. I mean, it's the theme of AEW right now. I truly believe that. It's, you know, I like Judas.
Will Ospreay's elevated, breathing down his neck. People love chanting for Ospreay.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Ospreay. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I mean, dude, I think AEW is, like, doing really good with their themes right now. I think Mikey Ruckus is pretty much a genius, you know. Yeah, I was like, the soundtrack of now is done by Mikey Ruckus, don't get me wrong. But sometimes people just hit a home run, you know. Sometimes people just hit a home run, and Big Pressure is the home run right now. It's the song right now. It's like take any fandom I have out of it. You know, it's kind of the song of AEW right now.
people have done his dance outside of wrestling.
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, when they had the cheerleaders and Prince Nana, and then, like, dude, I even said it. I mean, like, someone was doing a non-wrestling character. I was like, how is it not Prince Nana? This dude got this dance over, and it just adds to his character because Swerve comes out and he has this serious, mean, I'm about to mess someone up, right? And all this dancing and stuff is going around to him, and he doesn't react to it all. It gives him such, it gives him such a presence. It gives him such a thing. I was watching it, and I was like, it makes him, the fact that he's not reacting to his own song makes him look 10 times cooler.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yep. But yeah, we could do this all day, but I know you got a heart out.
We talked too long about some of these things in the first round.
Yes.
It was a fun conversation, Floyd. A very fun conversation.
Dude, you get me started. I won't shut up. You know how that works.
Oh, mate. Thank you for having me, man. It's been another fun week, I tell you that.
Yes. Thank everybody. And as you can see, we're getting creative with, you know, filling some time. I hope you're all enjoying it. If you have a subject that you want us to do a bracket on, hit at AT Elite or hit me or Sam directly, or you can go on the Social Suplex Discord, go to All Things Elite and put your bracket suggestions in there. Anyway, you know, we always looking for more content, so there is no bad ideas.
Indeed. Yep. I would echo all of that. You can hit me up on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. And yeah, the Discord's a great place to chat to us directly, chat to the rest of the people who are involved in Social Suplex and the other people who listen to it as well. As I sort of described on it last week, it has you can still get your takes off. It's not like everyone agrees with everyone. There's still some good discussion, but you're just removing a lot of the dickheads.
Yes, absolutely. So
great place to have a conversation.
Well, first, Sir Sam, this is your boy Floyd Johnson Jr. Saying thank you for listening. Thank you for sticking with us. We're having a blast doing it. Hope we're having a blast listening to it. And we will leave you like we always leave you, whether it is home, work, or school. Always do your best to be elite.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.